you know, being clear and being straightforward is always the best. I think that people often feel that they don't want to ruin the innocence of their children, and they're actually so nervous about bringing it up. But I think it's important for two reasons. One is that the police and community needs to know if there have been other girls that have been abused over the years by this individual. But secondly, any girls, if they have been abused, they are carrying a terrible burden that they've been unable to tell people, or else those parents would have known. So simply letting them know the parents will believe them, letting them know that they are not at fault, and there's no shame, that they are loved and will be supported if anything like this has happened, is what's really important when they bring this up.
What is some language that they can use to let them know that they're not blaming? Because the natural question is, well, why didn't you tell me this before? I mean,
right.
And that gets into potential victim blaming.
Absolutely. No, you'd never want to say that, even though you might be thinking it and wondering. But I think you would want to try to stay very calm and very, very non-judgmental, simply loving and supportive. I'm so sorry to hear this happened. I love you. And we are going to work on this and help you deal with it, because it must have been very hard for you.
How do parents assess what damage has been done? Because some kids may shrug it off easier than others. So their kids may have different needs if indeed they have been victimized. How should a parent assess what's going on with their kid?
If a child is reluctant to talk about it or seems upset, that is obviously a way of knowing that, you know, something is very problematic. But I would never assume it's not, even if a child is saying that there's nothing. I would probably bring every child into a counselor to have the counselor assess whether there's been some damage that the child is denying or avoiding. I think you always would want to assume that there's some damage.
What do you look for?
One of the ways that parents can look for whether a child is having a problem in general is whether their behavior changes, whether they go from being outgoing to very quiet, begin avoiding things, go back to some bedwetting that they had years ago but haven't had in a long time, or if grades go down, that's a way of knowing there might be a problem. A child crying a lot or anxiety, things that can't be explained, changes is one way. But as you say, there might be children that don't seem to show much of anything behaviorally, and I would say you would still assume that if they've gone through this, they are probably affected whether they know it or not or show it or not.
Another question is, how can parents avoid inducing something that isn't factual?
There has been research that shows you can actually create memories that can be false memories for people, but especially young children. So yes, that certainly is a concern, an issue that you want to be careful of. I think that not putting words into children's mouths is one major thing.
So don't ask, did a person do X, Y, Z? Say, did a person act inappropriately?
Yeah, except the word inappropriate for a young kid is not going to work. But you could be clear about, I would say particularly this individual, especially for children that have had this teacher in the past, you would ask, you'd have the parent would ask a child, did this individual ever make you feel uncomfortable or weird? Did he ever touch you or ask you to touch him? But if they say no at first, you don't push it. You don't insist that it happened. You don't get more and more graphic about it. You don't want to put words into their mouths. But you do have to have them understand what you're asking. Because if they don't understand what you're asking, you may get a really wrong answer.
If they hesitate and say no, should a parent drop it and think that it might come back later if the kid has more time to mull it over and say, okay, I'm in a safe place, I can say yes? Or how do kids generally react to such discomfort?
I think if a child were to be reluctant and hesitate and say, well, no, I think a parent needs to say, you know, if there was anything, I want you to be honest. It would not be your fault if there were. I love you, and I would just it's important that you tell me because secrets will hurt you, something like that. And that's something else, is that explaining to children about what we might call tricks that people use, many child molesters will trick, if you will, a child into not telling. They might make promises. They might allow a forbidden privilege. They might tell the child it's their fault or no one's going to believe them, or that if the child tells anyone, they're going to hurt the family or a pet or something like that. So we have no idea whether any of these things happened or in this situation.
Or indeed if anything legally
wrong
happened. He has not been convicted, and we shouldn't make that point.
Right, absolutely. But explaining to children that it looks like maybe there's something that they're not saying, letting them know, you know, nothing is going to happen to you or to the family if there is something and you're scared of telling me because you're ashamed or you're scared, we will handle it. We love you. We just need to know the truth and we will handle it. Without putting more words in or explaining more situations, are you sure he didn't do this, this, and this, and this? But just making a child feel safe and unjudged and loved.
We've already noted that there have been two allegations exposed, one in 2005 that did not result in charges, and another one in 2019 that now has resulted in charges. We're not going to touch that for the moment. Let's talk about a couple of past instances. In Bloomington Normal, there was a case in the late 80s, a principal at Colleen Hoos Elementary School in Unit 5 by the name of Bob Beamer, and John Andrew White, who molested girls in Urbana and in Bloomington Normal, who's now serving 60 years. Are there commonalities for child sexual predators?
Yes, there are. First of all, they either like boys or girls. They don't tend to molest both. And once they are a child molester, they tend to molest many, many children over the years. It's not a matter of an impulsive attraction to one child. It's actually a very self-conscious and deliberate plan that they tend to have. So they often will take jobs or activities that will put them close to children so that they can have access. So that might be teachers. It might be people that deal with youth in religious organizations or churches, and it might be Boy Scouts and Girl Scouts, all those kind, anything you can think of that would put an adult close to children so they would have an opportunity. The other thing is they are very careful and deliberate in their selection of children that they are going to molest. So it could be that they are children from divorced families or parents that are not involved with their children, aren't really watching carefully, keeping in touch and involved with their children. There was a teacher that explained exactly how he did it, and his plan was that he would tell the whole class a series of secrets. So he would start with a very innocent, nothing secret, like, you know, there's going to be a surprise at the end of the week, don't tell anyone. And then he would see which of the children would tell and which would not. And then he would take the ones that didn't tell, and he would take the next step for a little more important secret and see which of those told. And finally, at the end, he had a small group of children that told nothing to anyone. And those were the ones that he went after because he figured they would not tell if he molested them.
What do they do to gain the confidence of children, to get them to accept this unusual and poor damaging behavior?
One of the things they sometimes do is they have favorites and they give special rides home and special activities with these children and make them feel very special. And that would be one way, probably not the only way, but that's one way that they kind of prepare the ground for what they're going to do.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. We're talking with Dr. Lori Bergner in the wake of the weekend arrest of a first grade teacher from Unit 5 who taught at Glen Elementary School. So if they don't get caught, is there an average number of victims that we know about for the people who eventually do get caught before they get caught?
I read once that men who molest girls molest an average of something like 250 girls over the years. And men that molest boys, it was, I don't remember the number, but something like four times that amount for some reason.
wow.
Yeah,
just
really shocking.
Wow. Right. So what is a school district to do? It sounds like they're at a severe disadvantage for screening these types of mentalities.
Well, I think they certainly, one problem is that school, this isn't only for schools, but in general, a lot of places will, in order to not ruin the chances for jobs of people that they are getting rid of, will not give the information of what problems they've had to the next people that are hiring them. I think that's what happened earlier with Unit 5. That's certainly a problem we want to ask. And actually, one way they can do that is actually go beyond the references and call people that they know in the previous place of employment. Another thing certainly is to take very seriously any allegation. People sometimes think children are lying, and they rarely are. Obviously, it happens occasionally, but they rarely are. And you just can't afford not to take it extremely seriously.
A lot of parents are going to find that their kid is fine. Nothing happened to their kid. What should they do?
Parents should be talking about child sexual abuse, but also about sex in general from very early on, really when they're very tiny. There are going to be questions. There's a healthy interest that children are going to have in their bodies and in sex. And the more open and non-judgmental that parents can be with this right to start is just so important. I mean, one thing you should be doing is referring to body parts and having your child refer to body parts by their names rather than cutesy little names, and not avoiding or thinking it's terrible if your child is interested and is asking questions or exploring their own bodies. That's totally healthy. This is also an opportunity, though, for parents to talk about sex abuse with their child right now, since they're going to have to be asking their child anyway. Let them know that your body is your own and that you should never, ever do anything that is uncomfortable for you, that you have a right to say no. But that really includes parents, for that matter. It includes older adults. It includes even friends. It can include cousins and brothers and sisters. So that is important for children to know, because 90% of the situations in which children are sexually harmed are someone that they know. That also means, though, that a parent needs to not just say those words, but support a child. You know, there are things like, you know, you have to hug your grandma, you have to kiss your grandpa, because it's, some parents will think or tell a child it's disrespectful not to. And if a child says, I don't want to do that, don't try to force them. That's a modeling, a healthy model right there, to let them know you don't have to. Now, you can shake hands or give a high five or something like that. Give them options that are still respectful, but giving them the opportunity to know that they do not have to do those things. You can also talk about touch. And talking about sexual touch can be very confusing, because just plain physical touch can be very pleasant for kids. And that's why a lot of them feel shame, and they feel it's their fault if they allow it, because it actually felt good. But they need to know it's not okay if you are uncomfortable. You can say no, and even if it feels okay, that it feels good, that does not mean that it's your fault. Certainly explain about the kind of tricks and persuasion and threats that an individual can use. They should never believe that they should not tell their parents, or they could give them other people. Are there other people that you would feel comfortable talking with? So there's other people in case I'm not around or you're not comfortable with me. Don't try to force that. And also teach your child how to get out of uncomfortable or scary situations should they occur. So if something comes up, you can just say, I have to leave, my mother's expecting me, or I have to go potty now, or ways to get out that they feel comfortable with, because it's very difficult for a lot of children to say no to an adult. So giving them examples of how to say no is something they can feel comfortable with is really good. It's also an opportunity for prevention. So talking to children not only about what they should do if it ever happens that someone approaches them uncomfortably, but that they should never, ever do that to anyone else either, including another child. That just like, you know, it's not okay for you to hit or hurt other people, it's not okay for you to use tricks or force people to do something that's uncomfortable for them.